Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week with Health and SIS Minister Andrew Little, I asked him about a report from the Inspector General of Security and Intelligence on the SIS using Auckland Transport CCTV for surveillance and documents hacked from the Waikato DHB cyber attack being uploaded to the dark web. But I began with his thoughts on the government toughening up hate speech laws, with hate speech being proposed to become a criminal offence and could face harsher punishment. You're the lead minister of the government's response to the Christchurch attack Royal Commission. Do you think the proposed laws are doing enough on what the commission has recommended?
Yeah, look, the Royal Commission was very clear that the current law that we have, and we do have a law that criminalises hate speech, it's in the Human Rights Act, and the Royal Commission said it doesn't do enough. It is confined to stirring up or inciting disharmony in relation to race and national identity, but that's all. And the Royal Commission said in the context of the terrorist attack on the mosques in Christchurch, race and national identity aren't the only things that can be a cause for those, you know, who wish to stir up hatred on grounds of identity. There's religion, potentially sexuality, and so the law should cover all those sorts of things. But then it looked at the language of the current law, which was created in 1993, actually goes back to 1971, and said actually it's old-fashioned language, and we should look to countries like the UK who have modernised their language, and they do have a comparable hate speech law, and said we should have something that refers to that. I think the Royal Commission has been very clear, and indeed the discussion document the government has released has been very clear. This is about capturing the most egregious and extreme forms of expression, where clearly somebody is trying to stir up and animate others to take action against, including violent action against others, simply by reason of their race, ethnicity, religious faith, sexuality, or whatever. And I know that the debate looks like it's going to sort of get into all this, well, you know, what if I insult you? What if I say something offensive? The freedom of speech means we do have to tolerate offensive things, but we shouldn't have to tolerate those who inveigh against others to the extent of encouraging violence against them. And this is what this is about.
And just going on that, people are just confused. What's the threshold exactly between free speech and hate speech? What's your understanding on this?
Yeah, well, this is a subject of discussion all the time. I think if we go back to what the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act says, the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act sets out basic kind of civil and political rights that we have in human rights. And one of those is the right to freedom of speech and freedom of expression and what have you. But there's a very important proviso that the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act has in it, and it echoes what is in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the kind of the binding statement for the UN on human rights. And what it says is that those basic human, civil and political rights are not absolute, and it is possible for there to be justified limitations on rights. And I think we instinctively accept that. It is possible for me to exercise a right of freedom of movement, if you like, that transgresses other people's rights. I can't barge into somebody in a supermarket or in a crowded street or something and say, well, I've got my right of freedom of movement. You can't do that. We put limitations on rights. And the same thing about speech as well. It is possible for people to say some very, and it's not just about kind of being hurtful or nasty, but there are things that are about inciting others to widespread hatred and basically animating others to actions that will be intimidating or threatening or even violent towards others. If you have a look at the most recent examples we've had, so just a couple of weeks ago, Te Pāti Māori, somebody put a stuff up on YouTube that was basically saying we should attack Marae, we should attack Māori leaders. That is hate speech. We had the stuff that was also became evident, it was apparent on 4chan, against the Al Noor Mosque, for heaven's sake, the very place that was the subject of the attack just over 2 years ago. And here is somebody clearly intending to threaten and intimidate for hateful purposes. And I don't think we should tolerate that. And I would just say to those who say freedom of speech is absolutely everything, stand in the shoes of some of our minority communities, listen to them and see what they have to put up with, and then tell me that you agree that there freedom of speech should be absolutely unfettered and allow people to say some of the things that those communities have to put up with.
Okay, just jumping up on that, after the government said they are going to have those changes, the Al Noor Mosque has received several threats. Do you think this debate, are you worried that this debate will just bring more harm to minorities?
I think that's a real possibility, and I know that there are many communities, minority communities, who are fearful of just that. I've had that from people saying, you know, we don't even want this debate because we know that, you know, we will be blamed for it and we will be the subject of even more intense vitriol and what have you. And, you know, I get that, I understand it, and sadly that is a possibility. But this, I think, is an important debate we should have. You know, we set up this Royal Commission who heard from many communities as they put together their report and made their recommendations. There was a judge from the Supreme Court, one of the most senior judges, Willie Young, long-standing judges from the Supreme Court. We had a very senior diplomat. They were the two commissioners who put together that report. They heard from hundreds of people and many communities, and they've come up with this recommendation. Well, it behoves us, I think. We have a duty, I think, to at least give proper consideration and have a good public debate about the recommendation they put up. We should have a focus on whether our laws give proper protection, effective protection, against the worst of hate speech to many minority communities. I mean, you talk to members of the Jewish community and they will say to you, look, they've experienced this for decades and decades. You know, they have to put up with a lot, although admittedly I have to say there's some Jewish community leaders who are saying we don't want to be part of this debate either. But this is the situation. I just think we should have the debate, and it will go to extremes, but we should have this debate because I think the way New Zealand is now, we have a very, very diverse community. We have many communities, and many of them are feeling marginalised and isolated by some of the things they see and hear that are intended to be intimidating and threatening to them. So we should have this debate.
Okay. Moving on to my second topic for today, it's about a report that's released earlier this week by the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security, which said it is lawful for the SIS to survey people using Auckland Transport CCTV, but the Privacy Commissioner has said the memorandum of understanding for this arrangement is outdated because it's based on a law that changed in 2017. Is he correct on this?
Well, I think what the Inspector General said was that although the way the service is getting access to and using CCTV footage is lawful, he was concerned, A, that the memorandum of understanding predates the current law that our security and intelligence agencies are operating under, and B, that in any event, there's got to be proper understanding and safeguards about how access to CCTV footage can and should be used. So the Inspector General was saying, I think the Privacy Commissioner, who the Inspector General had consulted, wanted to make sure that this is not some sort of carte blanche thing, that there are limits around it to protect the lawfulness of it. And the service, I think, has said that they will get legal advice from Crown Law to make sure that even though everything they've been doing, according to the Inspector General, is lawful, that any ongoing access and use meets what the Inspector General clearly seems to be saying about proper safeguards.
But another issue here was because the Inspector General told the spin-off that when he began his review, the fact that the SIS used CCTV was classified. Should the service have let the Auckland public aware that they are using CCTV as surveillance tools?
Well, I think they've made a quite sensible decision that it shouldn't be classified, because the reality is I don't think anybody would think that any, whether it's law enforcement or intelligence agencies, would not have appropriate access to CCTV footage. I mean, the police have access to... there are thousands and thousands of CCTV cameras, mainly private and some publicly owned, recording all manner of things on our public spaces and streets and all the rest of it. The police routinely get access to it. It's one of the critical things they use in some of their more complex investigations. And you would expect intelligence agencies for a particular inquiry or investigation would have access to it. So I don't think anybody's surprised about that, but I think people do want to know. And it's the Inspector General who has to give this assurance, is that there are limits to that use, there are safeguards around it. And so far, what the Inspector General seems to be saying in the report released this week is, notwithstanding a technical legal issue about how access is obtained, that by and large, the use by the agencies or by the service is lawful. And I think, you know, that's just one of those things that I'd expect the Inspector General to be maintaining a constant vigilance on.
Okay. Moving on to my final topic of this week. It's on the Waikato DHB cyber attack that happened a couple of weeks ago. Now, we know some documents from the DHB were released on the dark web. Do you have any updates on that?
No, and we knew that once it had been clear that data had been exfiltrated, had been taken off the system and gone somewhere, that, you know, and you lose control at that point. We knew there was always a risk that information would appear somewhere. It is now apparent that it has turned up in on the dark web, and so some of that personal information of patients and staff is accessible by people who shouldn't have access to it. So we knew there was a risk of that. So my expectation is the DHB has in place a process, and they assure me that they do, to contact people whose information makes its way into the public domain, and then works with them and the Privacy Commission on kind of an effective response to that. So that's what has to be done. I think, the DHB is still in the process of remediating all the problems arising out of that attack. Once that is done, then there needs to be and there will be an independent investigation into exactly what happened and also and the impact of it too, because I think we need to understand what the impact is of this when you have systems, IT systems, that can be breached.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.